141. I'm Harold Fisher. Tonight, we are at the Political Roundtable. We're talking about the Trump administration, Black History Month, and of course, we're going to get to those Capitol Hill confirmations in just a few minutes. My guests are Simone Sanders, CNN political commentator, and former Bernie Sanders press secretary, and Raynard Jackson, a Republican political analyst. Lines are open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Before I go back to the phone lines, Simone, your thoughts about the rollout of the executive order on travel.
The executive order that Donald Trump signed last Friday was a travel ban for Muslims. It was a Muslim ban. It specifically targeted majority Muslim countries. And look, the rollout was messy, but the policy is messy in and of itself. And that is why you have seen in Virginia, Massachusetts, in New York, and states on down the line that have challenged this executive order. And the Justice Department, now they're going to court. And this could potentially go all the way up to the Supreme Court. And I would venture to say it smells a little unconstitutional. So we should be having a conversation about whether it's a ban or if it's not a ban or what the semantics are. The conversation rather should be about the people that are affected by this, what this means for our security in the world. You know, we're basically giving ISIS what they want. We are being a propaganda machine for them right now.
Let me go to the phone lines. Paul calling from Virginia. What's on your mind?
Yes, I just had a couple of things to say to your panel. I love this show and this roundtable that you have going on.
Thank you so much, Paul.
I wanted to talk about the Congressional Black Caucus and things like that. People are so resistant to Donald Trump because of the things that he said in the past. But my question is, what has the Congressional Black Caucus and places that they have run these major cities, Chicago, Cleveland, Detroit, all of these places have been run by the Congressional Black Caucus for 40 years. And look how things have gone. So why can't we try to work and get something done to see if something will happen? Like, one of the things that I think is a problem is that we as black folk, we are too dependent upon and we're too reliant on the Democratic Party. Not that we have to join the Republican Party, but if we keep ourselves independent and make both parties come for our interests and try to woo us, then maybe we might get some things done. But what do we have to show for being allegiant to the Democratic Party and the Congressional Black Caucus? What have they done? Look at Chicago and Detroit and Cleveland, places where every part of leadership has been Democratic for 40 years. What have those cities and the school systems in those areas that are all run by one party and one group, what do we have to show for it?
Well, Paul, let me see if Simone can respond to that. Simone, your thoughts about what Paul
said. Well, Chicago, if I do recall correctly, is situated in Illinois, which has a Republican governor, Governor Rayner. Detroit is situated in Michigan, which has a Republican governor, Governor Schneider. And Cleveland is situated in Ohio, which has a Republican governor, Governor Kasich. A lot of these legislatures are majority Republican-held legislatures. Out of the 99 legislatures in the country, 69 are controlled by Republicans. So I think first we need to take it back to a general civics lesson, ladies and gentlemen. There's only so much that your mayor can do. Your mayor is supposed to be working with your governor and with your state legislature. So I believe we need to hold the Democrats accountable. I'm the one out here calling for the resistance, okay? Every single day. Push them, y'all. The resistance is here and it matters. But we also have to take stock that when we don't have all the power, i.e. the governorships and the legislatures, when we don't have that power, we lose. And we lose out money for things like education in our communities. We have people pushing policies that are adverse to our kids and our communities. So we have to take a little inventory and a little stock. Nobody's asking anybody to follow the Democratic Party blindly, but I do think we need to wake up, pay attention, and get engaged and involved.
Renard?
Well, I tell you, I was amazed and astonished at Rahm Emanuel's response, the mayor of Chicago, to the Justice Department recently released report on the state of the Chicago PD. Mm-hmm. He acted like he was surprised. This has been racism towards blacks in Chicago has been going on for 40 years, documented. And when President Trump came out and said that if they didn't get Chicago under control, he's going to send the feds in.
Yeah.
Rahm Emanuel said, well, the Fed should have been doing something all along. It's like, your buddy was the president. You was his chief of staff, President Obama. You asked him to do nothing to be helpful.
But I think, and let's not get too far afield from what Paul is saying, and he's talking specifically about the CNBC. CBC. Thank you so much. The CBC. That, and he makes a good point. Nobody is suggesting that black folks should be loyal to the Democratic Party. I would argue that maybe they, you know, black folks need to be loyal to the Economic Party and look at the realities, you know, of the day. And some could also argue that no matter what you think about, you know, President Trump, if there is going to be infrastructure money coming into the cities, then, you know, black folks or any folks for that matter need to be a part of it to make sure that all boats rise with the tide. But, you know, right now, you know, things are bad. And I think the other thing, and I'll just say this, Paul, and I'm going to let you go, is that I think the big argument when you're talking about black folks is, yeah, we do pay attention to rhetoric. We do pay attention to things that are slights, whether they are direct slights or whether they are, you know, apparent slights. And, you know, you don't have to call me the N-word for me to feel uncomfortable around you to, you know, for me not to trust you. And so I think, you know, Paul, I think you do make an excellent point, but I think it gives a lot of people pause. And suffice it to say, you know, we're just barely 2 weeks in and a lot of folks are still having a lot of pause.
13 days.
Hey, thank you so much, Paul. I appreciate it. 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Lisa calling from Gaithersburg. Hey, Lisa, how are you?
I am well. How are you?
I'm just fine. Happy New Year.
And Happy New Year to you and your guests, especially to Raynard. We met in St. Louis a long time ago, and I consider him a friend, even if he is of the other political persuasion.
But thanks a lot,
Lisa. You can tell us some of his secrets when we're off the air. Go ahead. What's on your mind?
But no, we don't totally disagree. I just hope someone from the Congressional Black Caucus is tuning in tonight and listening to this, and maybe the chair of the Congressional Black Caucus could come on one night to talk about what the Congressional Black Caucus is doing that's not being advertised and we're not hearing on CNN and all the other places and only on TV One, plug for Roland. My question to Raynard is, what will it take for African-American leaders at the federal level? Let's not even identify it as the Congressional Black Caucus. We're talking political lawmakers and, you know, organizational leaders who are not Republicans and supporters of President Trump. What will it take for them to get a substantive meeting where you are talking about issues like entrepreneurship, saving historically black colleges and universities, and those issues outside of crime that African Americans really care about?
Wait a minute, you said what is it going to take for black Republicans to get a meeting with
who? No, for African American leaders at the national level, federal level, not just the political. If we had a national meeting of African American leaders, politicals as well, including the Congressional Black Caucus, and the agenda was to discuss substantive issues other than shootings in the city of Chicago, to talk about entrepreneurship, education, and all those other really important issues that we care about. What would it take to get the president to the table?
Wow, that's a heck of a question there. And matter of fact, I'm working on that very thing probably for June to do that very issue there. Now, what I keep telling folks, a lot of folks want to get in front of President Trump. I say your time is more useful if you work on the congressional level with the House and Senate in both parties' leadership. I think you get more done on that level because everybody wants to meet with President Trump for whatever reason or have him come out. And that's fine. You get all the media that goes along with a president you visit. But I think that gathering these types of people that you're talking about would be more effective inviting the congressional leadership to address policy issues that deal with entrepreneurship, education, HBCU. That's where I think you get most bang for your buck.
So now black people good enough to meet with the congressional leadership and not the president, but everybody else can meet with the president. I think that Donald Trump has demonstrated a few things to us, one of those which that he's a negotiator, and he likes to negotiate his own deals, and he has undermined the words and the speech of his surrogates and his staff so much so that he wants you to sometimes only believe him, only believe my words, don't believe the sources. So I think a meeting with President Trump is really important for those folks that Lisa was talking about, because that is probably where some promises are going to get made and some actual deals will be cut, if any deals at all.
Because, and I would agree with that, because as we've seen over the past 4 or 5 days, the president doesn't really seem to be interested in the institutions of Washington. You know, those traditions, you know, for example, the big ones or the small ones, you know, and there is that one. Those two traditions, the House and the Senate, where he does what he wants, he does executive orders. You know, hey, look, give the man credit for, you know, putting out these executive orders saying this is what I said and this is what I'm going to do. But if he's not talking to Paul Ryan, or if he's not talking to other leaders in the House or the Senate, I'm not so sure, Reynard, that what you're suggesting is going to happen working on the congressional level.
Well, no, I say that just in terms of what can happen the fastest and where you can get your more bang for your buck. Yeah, obviously, I think the president should meet with these groups, but it's got to be on it. And see, the other thing is the president has no blacks around him that understands the institution of the Republican Party. And so you can have sharp people around you, but if they don't understand who these smart, sharp black Republicans are who can get things done. Isn't it amazing not one congressional Republican black staffer was invited to this meeting this morning?
I think Jerron Smith was there, who did start at the White House in the Urban Affairs Department. And I know Ashley Bell was there, who was a senior advisor for the RNC during this last cycle. And now, I don't know what he does at the White House, but he clearly had a badge today. But that's it. And I know there are more folks. I guess the conversation for me is, like, you know, it's Black History Month. We've got this new administration. They just haven't reached out and made it look like they want to make any inroads with our community. So for folks like the NAACP and the Urban League, who have been overlooked constantly by Donald Trump, should they be?
They deserve to be overlooked.
Well, why? If Donald Trump says he wants to speak to black people, why did he deny invitations from the National Association for the Advancement of Colored People to address their convention? Why did he deny invitations from the Urban League to address their national
convention? Oh, I was glad he did that.
Why did he deny invitation from the National Association of Black Journalists and National Association of Hispanic Journalists? Look, Donald Trump just isn't serious. So for some of these groups, like the NAACP and the Urban League, I think they should continue. Look, I mean, if the president invites you, for some of these folks, maybe it's okay for you to go. But some people, we have to have a strategy outside of President Trump. I'll tell you, if Donald Trump calls me, I'm not coming because I'm a part of the resistance.
Lisa, thank you so much. I appreciate it. And one of the other arguments could be made also is that, you know, black people may not have been important when it came to getting him elected.
8%.
And so, you know, he may say.
But Donald Trump is the president of all people now.
Well, that is true. And they all are. But like I said, as we saw what happened on Inauguration Day and everything else, you know, finding black folks was not easy.
What happens when you put white supremacy in the White House with Steve
Simone.
Bannon.
Steve
Bannon is a white nationalist now.
Simone.
He is.
I was right here with you all day until
Steve Bannon is a white. He's a nationalist. He ran Breitbart. He said Breitbart was the platform of the alt-right. Alt-right is nothing but white supremacy and khakis.
And alt-facts. There we go. We're going to take a break. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Renee, calling from Northern Virginia, you're next. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to The Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141. I'm Harold Fisher. We are at the Political Roundtable with Simone Sanders, CNN political commentator and former Bernie Sanders press secretary, and Renard Jackson, Republican political analyst. Lines are still open at 202-319-7810, 202-319-7810. Renee calling from Northern Virginia. Hey, Renee, what's on your mind?
Hi, good evening.
Hi.
I wanted to go back to the original question about what took place today. I think the problem with Mr. Trump is that he has no respect for people of color. And I think he's shown it in his behavior and his words. He stereotypes us as though we all live in, you know, these substandard areas and that Chicago is reflective of the entire country, which is false. And then the gentleman who was in the listening session with him today, I mean, he spoke as if he was on that same level of vocabulary as Mr. Trump, nothing beyond very and, you know, all of these little menial things that they said in regards to body count. It's a multi-level issue, I think, what's taking place in some of the larger cities. And like the sister on the panel said, all politics is local. It's not necessarily President Obama's job to fix everything that's happening in urban America and then to try and point the finger at the Congressional Black Caucus or Representative Lewis, who the president, the current president, has no respect for. It's mutual. You have to give respect in order to receive respect, and I don't think he respects people of color. So why should anyone believe or, you know, take heart to anything that he's done or said up to this point? I just think that he doesn't respect us.
Okay.
Preach, Renee. Preach.
All right, Renee, thank you so much. I appreciate it. 202-319-7810. 202-319-7810. Let's go to the other end of Pennsylvania Avenue. Capitol Hill confirmations going on right now. Rex Tillerson has been sworn in. He was just sworn in about a minute or so ago, I guess. He is the new Secretary of State, oil man, friend of Vladimir Putin, and who knows what else.
Because we haven't seen the tax returns.
We haven't seen the president's tax returns. But then, of course, we were talking off air about Jeff Sessions out of committee. But we don't know what's going to happen with that. Betsy DeVos, the education secretary nominee, her nomination could be in trouble. Renard, I'll start with you. What's going on? We've got Tillerson. We don't have Sessions yet. DeVos. Where are we right now?
Well, Trump will get every nominee confirmed. That's not even arguable. The Democrats, it's almost like they know they've lost the fight already, so they're just going to drag it out the end of the game as long as they can. And that's what doesn't make sense to me and most people I talk with, regardless of their party affiliation. They know these guys are going to be confirmed, so let's just get it over with, confirm the people. And then if you want to fight them on policy as a senator, that's your right to do that. But don't drag this thing out when you know you don't have the votes to win.
You don't think DeVos is in trouble?
No, because what's going to happen, Manchin is going to get switch over and vote Republican, so you're 51 at that point. And even if Manchin, for whatever reason, doesn't, Mike Pence will break the tie. Hmm. And so she'll be confirmed regardless.
And before I ask Simone about this, your thoughts about Gorsuch, the Supreme Court nominee? That's that was a biggie last night. It was almost game show like in his reveal, because I don't think he knew until right before the reveal happened.
Well, no, he was notified Monday.
So then why bring them both in?
It's showtime, baby. Like, showtime.
I did say game show, right? So let's talk about that. Is this the Scalia 2.0?
Based on his record that I've been able to read so far, and so what we got to make a distinction with is you can disagree with a person philosophically and still can vote to confirm him. He still can be a good person. You just disagree with his conclusions legally. And so if the Democrats are going to try to filibuster this saying he is too conservative, which I don't have any idea what that means, they're going to be on the losing side of the argument. He will be confirmed. And yes, he's a conservative. Did you really expect Trump to nominate a liberal? No. So the Democrats, again, quit trying to drag your feet and confirm the guy, because the Democrats don't have the vote. And if they have to go nuclear, That's what's going to happen.
Simone, all of that that we were just talking about, not only the confirmations of the cabinet, but also your thoughts about Gorsuch.
Well, I think it's important that we put this in context. And the senators on Capitol Hill, the Democratic senators, they're not dragging their feet because they don't like Donald Trump and they're mad that they lost. I know that's a talking point from the Republicans that's been out there. But they are slow walking this process because they have real questions. You know, it looks like two of the nominees, at least, Price and Manchin, lied on their questionnaires, left out pertinent information, and then just flat out lied on some of the questionnaires. They wanted a chance to ask more questions. It just came out recently in the Washington Post that it looks like Senator Sessions was the author of this Muslim ban, a ban, actually, that Republican and Democratic senators and members of Congress in general have issues with. They wanted to ask more questions. So I think we should be concerned that Republicans are trying to ram these very problematic nominees down the throat of the American people. These Democratic senators have a duty. You know, the base is telling them to stand up and resist. And they are being pushed by their base to do more, to show up, quit acting like, you know, the house ain't on fire. Why are you just trying to get the keys and come through the front door? The house is on fire, ladies and gentlemen. So that is what's happening in the Senate. You know, we don't have the votes. Democrats do not have the votes to effectively stop anything. But I'll tell you, Betsy DeVos, two Republican senators flipped today because Democrats asked really great questions in the hearings. So the resistance does work. The resistance matters. And folks should keep it up. In terms of the Supreme Court nominee, the Democrats are going to ask three questions. They want to know, look, is this person going to just toe the line for Donald Trump, or are they going to stand on their own volition? Two, is Gorsuch going to continue to advocate on behalf of corporations? Because it's very problematic for lots of senators, some Republicans actually, too, that Gorsuch believes corporations are people. That is a core issue when we talk about Citizens United and get big money out of politics. And then the third question Democrats are going to be asking is about women's reproductive rights. And does Gorsuch believe that, you know, is he going to uphold the law? Roe v. Wade on down the line. You know, he had some issues in the Hobby Lobby case. He ruled in the lower court, got kicked up to the Supreme Court, the Supreme Court ruled on the opposite side of where Gorsuch ruled. So, Democrats have the right to ask these questions. You need 60 votes in the Senate to confirm a Supreme Court
51.
Nominee. You need 60 Court.
But we're going nuclear.
Not yet. It has not happened.
And
we just can't throw that out there.
And let us say that when you're talking about strategies and the like, and that's the other piece that I wanted to talk about. You know, Simone, you said, you know, Democrats aren't mad. Those are Republican talking points. I don't know about that. There's some ticked off Democrats, you know, considering what happened during this last go round. And I'm quite sure that they are probably trying to figure out how to address this nominee Gorsuch thing, because, you know, the reality is that there are other justices that may either retire, and let's hope that if they do leave, they only retire.
But that's speculatory.
It's strategy.
It is strategy. It is strategy. But the problem is the Democratic base don't want to hear about future strategy that may or may not be. So in terms of the cabinet nominees, I think Democrats have real concerns. I think they have real concerns, and I think those are Republican talking points. In terms of the Supreme Court nominee, oh, absolutely. There are senators, Democratic senators, that are still reeling from the fact that Republicans wouldn't even give Merrick Garland, President Obama's nominee, a confirmation hearing. Wouldn't even see and meet with him. So those feelings are still high. They're real. And folks are not just going to extend courtesy to the Republicans that the Republicans
did not
extend.
What did President Obama say? When he was president the first term, he met with Republican leaders, Paul Ryan specifically, and said, elections have consequences.
They
basically
do have
get
consequences.
Over it.
No,
I won,
no,
you
no.
lost.
Elections do have consequences, but the Republicans would have you believe that it was the American people that told them not to have a confirmation hearing for Merrick Garland because the American people wanted Donald Trump to pick wanted the next president to pick the next nominee. That is some BS.
But that was a
known
hypocrisy
up
on that area for on both sides.
And I was about to say, let us say that there's a whole lot of
pot calling the kettle, okay? I can admit
that. That's right, hypocrisy, yes. let's go back to the phone lines. Adrian calling from Waldorf. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, I just wanted to thank you all for the show, first of all. So I wanted to say that some of this is related to just Donald's inability to have been in the presence of blacks who are upwardly mobile, who are well-educated, who are as competent as he is. And if we remember how strongly he felt during the birth movement, we know that he already knows.
Gosh, Adrian, I'm sorry. You broke up and we can't quite hear you. I apologize. I'm going to have to let you go. But suffice it to say, this issue does not die today. But thank you so much for calling in. Let me go to Tori. Tori calling from Maryland. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, thank you. I just wanted to address the comment about Chicago. I'm originally from Chicago. Seven of my brothers and sisters still dwell there, and over 200 plus relatives. First of all, I think it's a conspiracy for the person who, the pastor out of Ohio, say the gang members came to him. Mm-hmm. I think this is a push from Donald Trump and those guys to continue the gentrification and the destruction of Chicago inner city and the people who are dwelling there. They have misplaced people from the project into the community that started all of this gang violence. They arrested all of the major drug lords who were serving as father figures to those guys who are committing some of these crimes. And I don't even believe that it's all gang related. I think some of those random shootings, and you can go to Chicago Tribune, they're doing a wonderful piece on tracking where the shootings are and how many are happening. And you're going to see patterns, and this is not all gang violence. We're starting a movement. You can go to change-broker.org. That's change-broker.org, and try to address it from a community level, not having Donald Trump going there. And just the final comment, that they need jobs and not jail.
Okay.
Jobs and not jail, and not to feed the prison industry, which I think is the Bush big push right now.
Well, Tori, thank you so much for sharing with us. We appreciate that. I also want to thank my guests, Simone Sanders and Renard Jackson. Thank you both for coming in. I appreciate
thank
it.
Thank you, Hal.
That is the Daily Drum on Sirius XM, Channel 141 for this Wednesday, February 1st. I'm Harold Fisher. You can follow me on Twitter at HFisher, WHUR, or Daily Drum, WHUR. Now, stay tuned for The Connection with Lorna Newton. Good night.
The Howard University Radio Network is WHUR 96.3 FM, WHUR World 96.3 HD2, student run.